Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
Without further ado, I'm going to hand over to Ruby, our presenter for today. Ruby is an educator, activist, coach, and community leader in the field of menstrual health. She works to champion a world in which where we integrate our cyclic awareness into our lives, and into how we relate and how we create. Her background spans psychology, burlesque, costume designing, life as a dominatrix, and an intimacy coach. And her initiative, Know Your Flow, is an online education and membership program bringing together an international network of women who are exploring cycle awareness as a tool for developing their body literacy and inspiring their leadership. Ruby sees this work as embodied activism, and I have to agree. And she's going to talk to us today about relating through the womb, wisdom for all genders. Ruby, I'm going to hand over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Kat. And thank you, everyone, for being here with so many different offerings and all this possibility to receive lots of information. I don't take it lightly that you're here and receptive to this session and what I have to share, and I'm really excited to share with you. And I can't see you, which I'm not used to, but I'm just going to feel you all out there with me and imagine that we're all sitting together and feeling cozy. So I would like to begin with just a little softening and coming into our bodies, because that's why we're here, right? And so I'm going to invite you just to notice how you're sitting or lying, and just seeing if you want to adjust your position so that you can really be comfortable and yet also receptive and awake and present to receive. And then if it feels good, you can let your gaze soften or allow your eyes to close. And I'm going to invite you just to intuitively place your hands somewhere on your body. And just notice, what is it like to feel the sense of your own gentle embrace? And I'm just going to offer the word and the feeling of home. Can there be a sense of home as you just bring your awareness down and in, feeling that reassuring hand on your body? Can there be a sense of home in body? And you can just feel your breath cycling. Perhaps there's a gentle movement with your hands. What does it mean to feel at home in the body? I'm just seeing if there can be a moment of softening, a moment of just a little more connection with that sense of being you, being here. And then just for a moment, feeling how your being here, your being a body, you're positioned somewhere on this earth. You've made a little patch of home somewhere. And all of us gathered on this call, or if you're watching the recording later, just sensing your little patch of home on this planet. On this earth that is cycling around the sun. And this is the theme that we're going to be exploring, a set of cycles. And so just noticing with your little patch of home, wherever you are on the earth, what season is it? Like I'm in Berlin, so it's autumn. Maybe you're on the southern hemisphere and it's spring. Maybe you're somewhere with a rainy season or a dry season. Just feeling into what season is it and how might that be impacting you? Does it give you a certain feeling or quality? And then you can also tune into another kind of cycle, the sun cycle or the moon cycle. What time of day is it where you are? And how is that perhaps impacting you, your energy levels, and how you're feeling? All these cycles that we're embedded in, all having their own influence on us. And then lastly, if you have a womb that's in its cycling years or that has a menstrual cycle, just noticing where are you in your menstrual cycle and how might that be affecting you? How does that show up for you in this moment? If you're closer to ovulation or menstruation. And if you don't have a womb or a womb cycle, don't worry, because this is for everyone, just this little bit, for those of us with wombs. Okay, and then you can just gently allow your hands to give you a little bit of a caress and come back. A little bit of a reassuring gesture. Have a little stretch, open your eyes. And then I'd love to use the chat function and get you to share what cycle we just looked at. Three, right? We looked at seasonal cycles, we looked at the sun and moon cycle, and we looked at the menstrual cycle. Which one of those did you notice an influence on you, and how did it make you feel? So I could say, you can also share where you're from. So I could write Berlin, autumn making me feel quite yin and introverted. Or day four of my cycle, feeling a little bit uplifted and shy. So again, the question, which cycle that we just explored, can you notice an impact on you? And what's the quality, what's the feeling that it gives you? So Janine says, autumn the sense of softening and yielding. Oh, it's so gorgeous. And someone also says, autumn, ripe, fulfilled, abundant. Autumn again, okay, with lots of northern hemispheres here, beginning of returning to the cocoon. It's also autumn in Poland, feeling like I want to cuddle and hide under a blanket. And there's some sadness to a sense of warmth. Okay. Lovely. Okay, so there's one more here. Thailand, end of the rainy season, feeling like I want to wander. I love feeling us scattered around the globe. It just makes me feel so excited. And like, okay, we can't see each other in person so much, but it's like one of the amazing things about Zoom is that we can gather in this phenomenally international way. So, I am really passionate about diversity. I'm really excited by the ways in which we're different. And that can be a bit edgy and controversial because there's a school of thought that says, well, let's just focus on what we all share and the fact that we're all one and let's not look at our differences. But there's something about our differences that really excites me because I'm excited by the sense of to get ourselves out of the mess that we're in, we need to be really creative. And we don't need one kind of creativity. We need a diversity of creativity. And that requires that we each connect with how we are unique and different. And so there are all kinds of ways in which diversity manifests and shows up in us as humans. And the one way that I'd like to focus on today is the way that expresses in gender. And I know that gender is a complex thing, and I know that it's way beyond a binary system, but that's not the focus of what I want to speak to you about today. I want to look at the binary because basically, even though we have people who express gender in a non-binary way, we live in a world in which most people are born into male or female bodies. And we also live in a world in which there is this increasingly obvious blind spot, I feel, that it has been shaped in quite a masculine way. And with the waves of feminism that have supported us to get to where we are, and there's so much to be grateful for, I feel like what's been happening is that women have been trying to play the game and meet men at eye level and try and, you know, get the top positions just like men and earn as much money as men. And we're kind of forgetting this question of, well, maybe we'd like to do things differently. And this is the question that fascinates me. And I want to share with you why or how I ended up with this question and the research that I've been doing with this amazing communities that I'm part of. And so my background is working with sexuality, in particular, the sort of shadowy aspects of sexuality, the more hidden parts that end up sort of trapping our life force. And when we find healthy ways to integrate those parts, we just can live with much more ease and integrity and energy, good energy. And so I ended up, not planned, but it just sort of happened, working as a dominatrix. And there's lots of stories I could tell you about that, but I won't have time for in my work as a dominatrix, I noticed that when I put on this stereotypical dominatrix role of being this kind of harsh, domineering, controlling, you know, kind of persona, I didn't feel powerful. And it was really felt violent towards my own system to try and be powerful and put on a role and then not feel that way. I needed to lead in a way in which I felt comfortable in my own skin. And there were plenty of moments where I did feel comfortable in my own skin, where I felt powerful, where I felt really connected to this gorgeous dynamic, the polarity between one person leading, taking initiative, holding space, and one person utterly surrendering. And so I just started tuning into this question of like, well, what is my way to lead? And is there such a thing as a feminine way of leading? And rather than try and read books about it and watch webinars and, you know, outside sources, the idea came to me, what if I researched my own body? What if I connected with my, even though gender identity and biological gender are not always the same, but what if my body gives me clues? And I began the process of cycle tracking. Now, I imagine some of you know what cycle tracking is and some of you don't. And I'm going to share with you what I mean so you can see. Here we go. Can you all see that? Yeah. So it's a bit nerdy, but what it is that every day, if you have a womb that is having a menstrual cycle, due to the ebb and flow of your hormones, every day you will have different qualities or skills or challenges or things that come to the surface that you start noticing. And then you can document it in this chart. And this is one that Nora made, and she really geeked out on it. So she has added, you can see here, you can add the moon phase as well to see how the lunar cycles impact you. And you can add the signs of your fertility. So your cervical mucus changes as you come into ovulation. So you can document that. And you can color code it and add different colors for different feelings. So she's like, she went all out with this chart. And by the way, if you want to have a chart, you can get one from my website, and there's all different sizes of charts as well, because not everyone has a 28-day cycle. So there's also a 32-day one and a 24-day one, things like that. So I'll share the link afterwards, and you're very welcome. So where was I? Lost my train of thought. Cycle charts. Oh no, this is like everyone's worst nightmare. We're in their mid-flow and then they forget what they're talking about. Okay, I will pick it up. I was talking about being a dominatrix, then I got into feminine leadership. I started cycle tracking, yeah. And so this has basically catalyzed me into this beautiful inquiry around what is life like when we really allow who we are as cyclical beings for that to be part of our life, to really embody that. And the reality is that we are not living that way at all. And it's a massive blind spot. And so my fascination is, what would the world look like if we were to start really embodying our cyclicality? What changes happen within us, and how would that ripple out into the world? How would we build systems and structures what would a work week look like? Because it wouldn't look like a 9 to 5, let me tell you. So I feel like me wanting to talk about this aspect of being a woman, it feels edgy because, you know, we have a history, a painful history of gender wars. We have a painful history of any kind of differences between us being used as a way of saying, well, you know, this is better than that, or, you know, that's not good, or that's exclusive to that. And then we have this whole aspect around the cultural conditioning around gender. If you're a woman, you're not allowed to be angry. And there's incredible research that shows that if people observe a woman being angry, they're likely to judge her as being incompetent. And if they see a man being angry, the man is judged as being competent. That is really screwed up. There's a wonderful book called Rage Becomes Her. If you're interested in the topic of women and anger, I really recommend it. And the author, Soraya, mentions that, I'm not sure what her resource is, but if this is true, it's really phenomenal. She says that the two things that are the primary indicators of good health in middle-aged women is not your diet or whether you smoke or things like that. It's your stress levels and the amount of suppressed anger that you have. Wow, that's really big. If that's true, that's massive. Anyway, going off on a tangent, or the fact that men are not meant to cry. And then we have statistics that say that 2/3 of suicides are from men, which is really tragic. So the cultural conditioning that we have is so destructive. And so what's the point in saying, you know, women are like this, men are like that? And I think what I'd like to transmit is that we all have capacity, regardless of what biological gender or the way our gender expresses, to connect with an infinite number of archetypal feelings and experiences. And yet those of us with wombs have who have a menstrual cycle, have a very particular sort of gateway into experiencing what you could call the cyclical blueprint of life. And this is a term by my colleague Anna Buzzoni, and I think it's so beautiful. Just as we did in the meditation beforehand, we connected with seasonal cycles and moon cycles and sun cycles. There is a cyclical blueprint where everything around us is actually cycling. From a macro level, you can also think about cycles in terms of extinction cycles or climate cycles, to the very, very micro. No, I'm not really a physicist, but I know that, you know, when you bring it right down to the electron, there's also like an oscillation that happens. It's the sort of fundamental building blocks of life. And in a moment, I want to share with you a little bit in more detail around the kind of archetypal cycle. And then we can start looking at the kind of cultural conditioning that we have that values certain types of the cycle and less so other types of the cycle, and the trouble that that brings us into. And then look at like the positive impacts that what happens when we start embracing our being cyclical. So I'm going to share a little slide with you again. By the way, if you have questions, you can use the question little option. And in a moment, I'll pause and invite Kat to read out some questions. So if I'm speaking and something bubbles up for you that you'd like to know about, then please. And I really enjoy this sort of interaction as well. But let's get a bit geeky first. And look at a womb cycle. So, mm-hmm. Here we go. Okay. So one way we can look at an archetype or cycle is to think of it as having kind of two currents, if you like. And we have, if you imagine like a seed that's starting to germinate and move into its potential and blossom, and it's this kind of current, I call it here, the current of creative manifestation. It's the yang current. And at one point of that seed's journey, unfolding into a plant and blossoming, or whether that's spring turning into summer, there'll be a peak, right? There'll be a peak of blossoming and expression, and then something else somehow starts to happen. And one perspective that I'm offering to you, you can see if you have a resonance with it or not, or if it's helpful, is that it's like we switch currents. And I call this current the current of returning to source. And that plant starts to kind of wither, or it starts to release its berries or seeds. It starts to dry out, and it's a sense of like returning home, back home into the earth. And so on an energetic level, and I can talk about womb cycles and the physiology behind it. And I think I'm not going to talk so much about that, because you can Google that and you can learn about the physiology and hormones of a womb cycle anywhere. But it's, I find it fascinating to look at the kind of energetic aspects and how that shows up in our bodies in terms of like what we find easy, what we find difficult, like how that experience, how we experience that in our day-to-day life. So I'm not going to go into the physiology, but here I've pictured these four seasons, and it's also one way that you can look at what's happening in a archetypal womb cycle. You can see it that we have these two energetic poles of menstruation and ovulation that are kind of opposite each other. And between those two poles, we have these two currents. So from menstruation to ovulation, it's this wave of energy, thanks to estrogen, bringing us out into the world. And then we peak at ovulation. And then if we don't have an egg that's fertilized, we start coming back, riding this wave of energy, the yin down and in into our bodies. And one way of seeing that is in the seasons of menstruation being more a kind of wintry, energy is very low, and then ovulation being the summer where we have lots of energy. And this is an archetypal cycle. So what that means is that everyone's experience will be slightly different. And it gets really interesting when your experience doesn't match with what's really meant to be, so to say, because our cycle is always guiding us and revealing something to us. It's speaking to us, and any little discrepancies or challenges that show up are a fascinating gateway into learning about an imbalance that we might have. And our menstrual cycle is actually our fifth vital sign. So just as like a doctor would measure your pulse or your heart rate or your temperature to make sure that you're healthy and alive, your menstrual cycle is exactly the same. So it's really worth paying attention to the little challenges and signs that something is revealing itself that's not, you know, the sort of healthy, normal archetype or pattern. I just pause and take a breath. Okay. Actually, I'm just going to pause here and see if there's any questions.
Thanks, Ruby. Yeah, there are a few coming in. Lenora was just checking that she heard right. I think that 2/3 of suicides worldwide are men. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of questions about cycles if you're pregnant or menopausal. So Elle Donovan says, I'm postmenopausal, how do I fit into psyche? Yeah. Which is a great question. And we had somebody asking, how does this fit with second trimester of pregnancy? So there's okay.
Thank you for the question. So if you are pregnant or you are menopausal, you won't have a menstrual cycle, but there are so many other ways that you can, or a very common way to connect with the sense of being cyclical is through the moon cycle. And so at the Red School, which I highly recommend you check out, also if you are menopausal, they're doing a wonderful offering at the moment for menopause, all about the beauty and the depth and the dignity of menopause, which is so lacking in our society. But Alexandra, who is the initiator of the Red School, she's menopausal, and whenever we do our womb check-ins, she will always relate to the moon cycle, and that's what she teaches to menopausal women. And I have spoken to a number of different pregnant women who really struggle not having their cycle, no, because it's something that you can really get used to. There's like a regularity and a rhythm to it, and a kind of anchoring yourself within that within that cycle, and then it just completely goes when you're pregnant. So it's a challenge and it returns, of course, and there is the moon, or also the sense of being embedded in all these different cycles, such as seasonal cycles, moon cycles. So yeah. One more.
Yeah, we have another one. And I think I have a sense that you might be coming to this, but I'll ask it anyway. Mm-hmm. Reem was saying that for the last few years, she's been using the app Clue. Like a cycle tracking app, and is asking, what are the most important things we will learn from your style of charting, and is it okay to use longer charts than your cycle if your cycle is irregular, like 26 to 32 days?
So I have Clue on my phone as well and I only use Clue to find out when to expect my next bleed. And I'm not sure how much you can document on Clue, actually. So Clue is very sciencey based. It's used for people, I think, who want to track their fertility, who maybe have health issues and they want to keep track of certain things, what their diet is, their exercise, various things, and it's all wonderful. Any kind of tracking is wonderful, and I think that the paper chart is because no one has developed an app for a phone yet that's like the perfect app when you're doing it not for fertility tracking reasons and not so much for health reasons, but you want to really explore the depths of what's possible when you're really connected to your cycle and you're using your cycle to structure your life and learn how to do what when, and the whole sort of personal growth aspect of the cycle. And I shared beforehand that your cycle is like your fifth vital sign. But it gets so fascinating when you start looking at the challenges that happen. So, for example, you notice in your tracking, when you get into the nitty-gritty, that, you know, as you enter into your autumn, you feel irritable and you feel overwhelmed. It's very common, though. And then once you start really paying attention to that, you begin to realize that your needs are constantly changing day by day because of where you are in your cycle. And if you keep on going as though every day were the same, you're going to get really irritable. You're not going to feel good. And that's the way that our society is kind of structured, no, is that every day is the same as the one before. But if you have a cycling womb, it's just not the case for you. So in the first half of your cycle, you will be riding this wave of estrogen that has certain qualities associated with it. No, you are, research shows you're more up for risk-taking and adventure. You're more sociable. You're apparently more attractive as well. Your face literally changes. There's little subtle changes in your face and you're considered more attractive by other people. Your choice of lovers changes as well. You will be much more drawn to risky situations and people that in your luteal phase you would definitely not consider, because then you're way more into like safety and reliability. But you know, when you're ovulating, it's different. So as we move towards the second half of our cycle, progesterone makes an appearance, and that just changes everything. So, and this, I mean, I'm kind of answering in a very broad way now, because yes, I am talking about things that are really important for me to include. So progesterone is a kind of a relaxant hormone. It aids good sleep. It makes us more sensitive. It slows us down. It helps us read the sort of subtleties, read between the lines. And I don't know if it's progesterone or the perfect cocktail between estrogen and progesterone. But there is a quality that comes into the forefront as we move towards our menstruation, which is that we become more critical. We start noticing things that bother us. Maybe you can relate to that, that your like inner bullshit detector is like in full force before you bleed. Excuse me. And there's plenty of scientific research to document this as well, that you're more likely to notice things that need attention and perhaps displease you, whereas in earlier parts of your cycle it's like there's a sense of like, wow, everything is possible and I'm in love with the world. So anyway, if we keep going as we're, you know, in this every day is the same, pushing, which is what our society would have us do, we start getting irritable and we start feeling not good in our own skin, the realms of PMS, PMT. So when you start cycle tracking in a kind of nerdy way and you really get into detail and you notice these little changes, it brings up inquiries. Okay, what is my relationship to slowing down? What's my relationship to just being instead of just doing all the time? What's my relationship to rest? Oh, wow, it's not just me, it's the whole culture that I'm embedded in. There's an imbalance, there's a focus on the yang, on the doing, the action, the having goals, the producing something, the visible. And then the cycle teaches us that there's this whole other half that's just as important and valuable and needed and reflected to us in nature and all the cycles of life. And that's this, the yin. It's the coming down and in, allowing ourselves to become softer and more receptive and allowing the world to touch us. Now it's this movement rather than this movement. It's the listening, it's the realms of the intuition and the feeling, the sort of internal guidance. Or just another example with the cycle tracking, for a personal share, I noticed that in the first days of my spring, or transitioning from winter to spring. So that's transitioning after I bleed, when that estrogen starts picking up. I feel very vulnerable. I feel very volatile. And so, you know, you notice that on one cycle, and then if you've got paper in front of you, you can very easily look at your different cycle charts, can't you? And you can go, oh, wow, that happened last time as well, around the same day. Oh, wow, that's a pattern that I'm observing. And then noticing that, okay, there's something about my relationship to coming out into the world again. And that mirrors something really old inside me around being born and early experiences of how safe do I feel, how embraced do I feel, and then doing a lot of integrating work around those feelings. So the depth of possibilities for free therapy, basically, when we start paying attention and noticing the patterns, is huge. And there's something around yes, you could do it in an app if you had the perfect app, but there's something around having the papers out in front of you and being able to see it. And also I find that embracing our cycles and our wombs, there's something poetic about it. There's a beauty in it. It's like life is inviting us to, wow, like fall in love with this aspect of being human, that's like, or human in a female body, that no one has ever talked about. And and the level of sort of intimacy with ourselves that it can help foster, and this enchantment of feeling like, wow, I'm just like, this is one type of cycle that's embedded in so many other kinds. There's something enchanting and poetic and beautiful about it. And therefore, you know, to handwrite something kind of like matches that. So yeah. Are there any other burning questions? Or
a couple actually, that, yeah. Again, I think are around a similar thing. So I can't find the name right now, but asked about what happens if you're taking the pill and there is a no bleed. And Rosie was asking about, what if you have sort of wildly irregular cycles from either previously being on contraception or just, you know, having skipped cycles? So what's your advice for tracking if the cycles are totally irregular or there's no bleed?
Yeah. So to put it very bluntly, if you're on the contraceptive pill, you just don't have a menstrual cycle. Even if you stop taking the pill for a few days each month and you bleed, it's not technically menstruation. In fact, there's no reason, it's not doing anything. There's no reason why you would take a few days off. It has no health benefits, is my understanding. And I know that for some of us, it's not so easy as just coming off the pill, because there are certain health conditions, medical complications, where the pill can be a real lifesaver. But if you're using it for contraception, I would encourage you to think about alternatives, because you really are messing with your hormones if you're taking the contraceptive pill. And it is a process coming off it, but there are thousands of us who are doing it all the time, and it is possible, and your body will thank you for it. And when it comes to irregular cycles, I mean, it's a huge subject, right? And having problematic cycles has to do with so many different things. It can have to do with, you know, your genes and the tendencies that have been passed down to you through your parents and their parents. It can have to do with your diet. It can have to do with your lifestyle. If you're jetting around, and not many of us are jetting around these days, but that has an impact on your cycle, your stress levels. I have seen through the communities that I'm part of how cycle tracking and starting to really tailor your self-care so that you are living to the best of your ability, you know, you're managing your energy levels so that you are not bypassing your cycle, but living in attunement with it, that can really help this sense of regularity. And then a key around irregular cycles is learning to notice when you are ovulating, because the general rule to my understanding, is that the time after ovulation to bleed is always the same. And in a 28-day cycle, it's around 14 days. And so it will be the time leading up into ovulation that varies. And so you can look at like what's happening in your life in those days between your bleed and ovulation. And there's also herbs that you can take that support the process of helping the body to ovulate. So it's all about the ovulation. Yeah. I just, gosh, time is going so fast. Yeah. Are there any other questions?
There are. You have about 8 minutes. So I don't know if there's something that you want to cover that you didn't cover yet, and then we can come to questions after.
Yeah, I'd really love to see if I can put it in a little nutshell. The kind of consequences of what happens when we, you know, the foundational practice of cycle tracking that really helps us start noticing and cultivating the sensitivity. And at first it can seem really obscure, like, how do I know it's my cycle and not just me going from one intense experience to the next? And so by cycle tracking, we're really starting to cultivate the sensitivity. And if we stick with it, we develop the sensitivity to start noticing all the different qualities and feelings and tendencies and skills that sort of shift from day to day. And so what happens when we start doing that? Like, what are the benefits? And what does that have to do with activism as well, which is what I'm so passionate about, because I really believe that it has massive implications for the planet if more and more of us were to live this way. And you know, I'm sure that the word disembodiment and trauma has been mentioned in so many of these sessions. And it's something that we're becoming collectively increasingly aware of, how disembodied we are. And I wonder if those of us who identify as women, who've been socialized as women, have a particular sort of flavor of disembodiment on top of the disembodiment that's already there, because of the phenomena of objectification as well. And I think that's, you know, it might sound a bit full-on objectification, but I think it's one of these subtle sort of pervading things in the air that that's a blind spot. I don't think we realize how much that women's bodies are objectified and what impact that has on us. And there is research around that that shows that the higher the level of our own self-objectification, the less likely we are to sort of feel our own heartbeat and be able to read our body signals. And so by sort of bringing our full, you know, inhabiting our fullness, including our wombs and who we are as cyclical beings, it's like we're really like coming into our own inner authority again. It's like, if I'm really tuned into how I'm feeling and changing every single day, I'm really connected to my needs, what I need in order to thrive. I'm really connected to my desires. I'm really connected to my boundaries. And like, just noticing how the world is so not conducive to being cyclical, it really, this process of embodying our cyclicality makes us masterful at boundaries and really taking good care of ourselves. And it's like we're sort of bringing our power back to ourselves. We're bringing our power back into the sort of invisible realms, the intuitive realms as well. No, that doesn't live in our busy minds. It lives, I don't know where it lives, but it lives in our bodies. No, it lives when we sort of bring our awareness down and come into this space of being and listening. And with that sort of being and listening and embracing that yin of our cycle, we're having to redefine our entire value system. That being is just as valuable as doing. That feeling and allowing ourselves to sort of be penetrated by life, to feel deeply that that's not weakness, that that is necessary and powerful and crucial for the world. And with that redefining our values, it's like we're having to redefine intelligence as well. I love the way Philip Shepherd talks about intelligence. If you, check him out. He has given a talk as well. He talks about how, you know, we think of intelligence as living in our heads, as, you know, and it's IQ. It's like, you know, intelligence lives up here. And yet, the body and our capacity for being receptive and allowing ourselves to be touched by life, that like that is that deep connection, that sense of relatedness is what enables us to respond. And that it's the body, it's the felt experience, the being receptive to life that helps us respond. That's intelligence as a kind of creative emergent process. Not something that lives up here, because our thoughts are always like one step removed. There's so much more I could say. And I just, maybe just on a very personal speaking of embodying the yin, I'll just embody my yin for a moment and see what really wants to be shared in this last little moment. Yeah, I think if I had to name one thing that this process of cyclicality is fostering, it's being in right relationship with life. It's being in reverence and wonder for our bodies and for life, and right relationship also being around knowing that there is a need and a time and a place for everything, that wholeness, which nature is mirroring to us in every moment, involves creating and striving for and going for it and showing up and expression. And it also involves slowing down and listening and feeling and playing and reflecting and dreaming and intuiting. And you know, life is just this full spectrum of different possibilities. And you know, it's constantly teaching us that if we don't honor our wholeness, life's gonna bite us on the ass. And I've reached my time. I can see Kat looking at me. So yes.
I definitely don't want to stop you. I could listen to you for days. Oh. And I just want to reflect back to you some of the comments in the chat, really. Just everyone incredibly grateful, really, to first of all hear these words. I think as a woman with a womb, it's such a relief, isn't it, to hear, oh God, I don't have to keep like cracking the whip on myself so hard all the time. But also gratitude for the way that you kind of model the yinness, really. And I think I wanted to say this at the beginning, that one of the reasons I wanted to host this session was as much about the content that you share, and I'm a big fan of cyclic living and try and follow it, is the way in which you bring the subjects to the world. It's really, it feels very embodied. And I think that's as much the learning as tracking the cycle is then living in synchronicity with it or alignment with it, as you said. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to take up too much more time. I'm going to make a couple of, in the spirit of yinness, very gently, a couple of announcements to everyone, and then I'm going to come back to you, Ruby, for the last word. And in the meantime, Marta, our amazing tech host, is going to post some links to some things I'm mentioning and link to your website, Ruby. So first of all, thank you. What an amazing session. Just thanks for bringing this wisdom to the world, the conference, and thank you to the people who came and watched live, who are watching on the recording. This is activism. It's really important to learn it for our own bodies and to share it for the bodies around us. You know that this recording is available for free for 48 hours. And after that time, it's available to buy. And there's a few reasons that you might want to do that. In sort of rebellion of this yang world that we live in, which is absorb and learn and take it all on, is give yourself time to reflect on the presentation that Ruby's made and some of the conversations that we've had. And if you buy the recordings, then you have that space to do that. The other reason we're inviting you to buy the recordings, if you can afford it, is it helps support this project, which is heavily run by volunteers. And we're passionate about bringing embodiment to as many people as possible. And buying the recordings is kind of helping us crowdfund that mission, basically. So if you can afford it, you help also pay for people who can't afford it, which is a wonderful thing to do. So, and I think, thank you, Marta, has put links to all of that stuff in the chat. So as we're doing with all of our presenters, Ruby, I'm coming back to you with one final question. you have a few minutes to reflect and share. What is your top tip right now in your field right now for staying embodied?
Well, I'm going to reconnect with my background of working with sexuality and say pleasure. Look for the pleasure, because pleasure also makes us remember how good it is to be alive and how life is really worth protecting. It's worth standing for. And while there's so much, struggle and hardship in the world, there's always a little bit of pleasure somewhere that's available. And that is life affirming, and that's what we need, more things that are life affirming. So thank you so much, everyone. Thank you. And Kat, you're a gorgeous host. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Ruby. And I just want to say there's loads of sessions on this channel which have been about pleasure, so there's plenty. If it's new to you, there's plenty to dive into. And thanks again to Ruby, and thanks to Marta, our tech host, who has been keeping a track of everything in the background. I've taken a copy of the questions that we didn't get round to, just in case Ruby wants to spend some time reflecting on those and maybe come back to the group through the Facebook group, which I didn't mention, but the Facebook group for this channel is we posted the link to. And that's a place where we can kind of carry on the discussion, carry on the conversation, and you can find out a bit more about Ruby and what she does. So thank you, everyone. Excellent timekeeping. I'm very proud of us. And we're going to close the session now. Just to say to you, Ruby, we're going to close the room. If you want to reach out to me afterwards, you can do. Thank you, everyone, for coming.